The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
The year is 1799. Justy Flanagan has just returned to his native New York from Ireland, where he helped to fight in the United Irishmen's 1798 rebellion. He is a policeman and he begins investigations into a string of murders, which in turn leads him to uncovering a conspiracy on Wall Street, the likes of which had not been seen at that time. Now, this is a part of the plot of The Devil's Half Mile. It's a gripping story of intrigue, but equally gripping is the story of the author, who is with me now. Paddy Hirsch, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, Hirsch, where are the Hirsches from?
Well, I think originally from Alsace-Lorraine in northern France or southern Germany, depending on, you know, where your politics lie.
Yeah.
But there was a great-great-grandfather who many years ago moved to Armagh and set up shop there, I believe, as a teacher. And that's where we come from.
Are there many Hirsches still in Armagh?
Very few. I think there's maybe one or two. In fact, the whole of Ireland, I think there's only a handful.
Okay, but you were not born there.
No, my father was in the British Army. He was based in the south of England. And I was actually born in Weymouth in Dorset.
So you're something of a geographical mongrel in this sense.
I am indeed. Bounced around almost every 2 years my whole life.
Yeah. Now, your education, where was that conducted?
Both in the south and the north of Ireland. So initially I went to school here in Dublin, actually in Dorky, a place called Castle Park School. And then I went up to Belfast to Campbell College. So I was very expensively educated, if not particularly well educated.
Yeah. You might have gone to Trinity College in Dublin?
I might have gone to Trinity College, but I couldn't get in there because I don't think I got the grades. So I had to go to Warwick University in England instead, a poor second perhaps.
Mm. Currently you live in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Are you a full-time writer?
No, I'm actually a full-time journalist. So I work...
Well, that's writing of...
Well, I'm more of an editor, actually. So I work for National Public Radio, which is, I guess, the sort of equivalent of RTE or the BBC in the US. And they have a podcast unit and I edit a business podcast called The Planet Money Indicator.
The Planet Money Indicator.
Yeah, so they have this unit called Planet Money, which is all about explaining finance and economics and that kind of stuff. And then they have a daily show, sort of a 10-minute hit called The Indicator, which takes a number every day and says, oh, here's an article about something about the economy you don't know and we'll explain it for you.
Give me an example of one you can recall.
Well, for example, we did something recently on independent bookstores. So there was some information came out about a rise, actually, in the number of independent bookstores in the US.
This is against the background of Amazon.
Exactly.
This is counterintuitive.
Very counterintuitive. So we look for those kinds of counterintuitive indicators that can tell you about things that are going on in the economy and explain why it is that independent bookstores are doing as well as they're doing.
And why?
Well, the reason is because there's actually been this this sort of community backlash against Amazon. You know, communities have realized that when the bookstores went away, which they did in many cases when Amazon arrived, that they lost a kind of a locus within the community of places where they could discuss or sit down and, you know, have a sense of community. So they brought those bookstores back, or at least small bookstores set up shop.
And they tend to be bookstores / coffee shop in many cases.
In most cases, yes. And in fact, one of the larger pieces of revenue that these bookstores have is from the sale of coffee and baked goods.
Yeah, because presumably when you buy a book on Amazon, and you can even read the synopsis on Amazon and so on, mm-hmm. It seems like it's an effortless thing to do, but it is perhaps less pleasurable.
I think it's
browsing the shelves.
I think it's much less pleasurable. You know, you lose that serendipity. And, you know, the Amazon has, in fact, most of these online retailers have tried to create this serendipity with algorithms, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't compete with the experience of walking into a bookshop, having a conversation with a clerk who understands the books and can make a recommendation, or, you know, just walking in and seeing a cover that you like and buying it.
It's a bit like Spotify. You know, if you're a subscriber to Spotify and all the music in the world is available to you, you tend to go only looking for what you know. Mm. It will suggest, you know, if you're going in a particular genre, perhaps you might like this. But that's very different to the experience of listening to some esoteric DJ on radio who's making selections for you. And you discover things that you might never have otherwise discovered.
Absolutely. Or, you know, having a conversation with someone in a pub who can recommend something and you learn something about yourself because you're surprised by the choice that they've made that you like.
And the same might happen in a bookstore.
One would hope, yes.
Now, where did the inspiration for your book come from?
Well, as I say, I'm a journalist. I wrote a non-fiction kind of explainer about financial markets a few years ago, and I wanted to write a follow-up to that about the way that a financial market, in particular, and specifically the New York Stock Exchange, was created in the wake of this first financial panic that America had in 1793.
Explain, what happened?
Well, there was a fellow called William Duer, was a speculator who basically tried to corner the market in government bonds. And he borrowed a great deal of money. The market moved against him. He went bankrupt. And as a result, all the people that he lent money to got spooked. And so they started selling all of their shares and selling all of their bonds. And that created a run on the banks because other people needed to get their money back. And Alexander Hamilton had to step in and bail the banks out. Does any of this sound familiar?
Yeah.
It's kind of a replica of what happened in 2008. So I was very interested in how the market sort of got created or was formed after that. So I dug into history, did a lot of reading and, you know, read letters between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson. And I got really, really bored and decided that I might actually write a murder into this narrative just to keep my hand in and keep myself interested.
Yeah.
And really that just took over the whole project.
The intervention of government into the financial markets at the time and the creation of the stock exchange, how was the stock exchange supposed to bring stability?
Well, so it's interesting because this conversation that Jefferson and Hamilton had, Hamilton said, we need to put some rules around the whole market because we can't trust people when there's fear and greed are involved in huge amounts of money. People are just going to act, you know, they're just going to ignore all convention. Thomas Jefferson said, no, we can trust people to regulate themselves. They're going to create these little organizations and they're going to regulate themselves. It's going to be sort of like a club where you obey the rules of the club. And that's what the New York Stock Exchange was. It was a bunch of 17 people who got together and said, we are going to form our own rules. It means we're going to have our own little cartel where we'll trade with each other. And we don't have to do what the auctioneers do or what anyone else in the market wants to do. We'll have our own system.
But they were a small group of people. Now, how did that expand to welcome all comers? I mean, people who wanted to be listed.
Well, the answer is it didn't welcome all comers. That was the point. I mean, it grew, but it was very, very selective in terms of the people who could actually trade in this unit. And the market itself continued outside of the New York Stock Exchange without any kind of regulation at all. So people could buy and sell whatever they wanted in the market, but they didn't have these informal rules that the New York Stock Exchange had created. So you weren't sure who you were dealing with. You weren't sure if you were getting the right price.
Quite easily.
You could very easily be ripped off. And in fact, you were. And it wasn't until 1923 that there were any kind of formal rules created around the markets after the Securities Act was put in place.
But of course, that's only 6 years before the great crash of 1929.
There
you put all the rules in place. You think you've an ordered business, and then the great crash occurs. Now, why did that happen?
Well, again, that happened because you had a loss of faith in the system. I mean, really, all of these things are—they're not actually. These aren't about issues with the with companies specifically. It's about confidence in the system. And if people lose confidence, it doesn't matter how healthy the companies are.
It's like the run on the bank.
It's like
if you think the bank doesn't have the money to repay you what you're owed, then you want to get yours out before they run out of cash.
Exactly right. That happened in 1929. That happened in 2007. So it's, these things, just history repeats itself over and over again.
Is there much talk in the United States at the moment about, the hackability of these financial systems? Because we know that the transactions are done now at the speed of light. They are not transparent to the ordinary man or woman.
No, I don't think they're transparent to anybody, actually. I think hardly anybody understands them. And yes, they are very hackable. This is a big problem. It's like all of our infrastructure now is dependent on the internet. It's dependent on wireless systems that are, could be potentially very easily penetrated. So a lot of money is spent by the banks on security. And the irony, of course, is they spend millions and billions of dollars on security. And then they find that there are these very simple flaws that can be exploited. So I think there's a real worry about that today.
Now, there was the gold standard where every dollar was backed up by a piece of gold in Fort Knox. That's no longer the case. Mm-hmm. And money now seems to be just not real. It's ephemeral.
Yes.
It exists in a cloud somewhere.
Yes.
So the idea of creating money at a whim, which, of course, with quantitative easing, the banks have been doing both in the United States and in Europe, you wonder, what is money anymore?
It's a very good question. What is money anyway? But then you could ask the same question about gold. I mean, gold's just a precious metal. It's just a thing you've dug out of the ground. Why not do the same with Bitcoin? This is just a concept that you've mined out of a computer program. So we place value on things that why do those things intrinsically have value? We place value on diamonds, and yet we know that the diamond market is rigorously controlled by a small
cartel, by
De Beers. Yeah. Why do we trust gold as the store of money? Why not trust in each other? Trust in each other's institutions.
And the idea of Bitcoin. There's an ad that we had running on television some years ago where there are people upstairs in a bus, and one says, I don't understand what a tracker mortgage is. And someone else says something about another financial instrument. I don't really understand what Bitcoin is.
I don't understand what Bitcoin is either. That's why I don't go anywhere near it. And I would advise everybody to do the same things, run
a
mile.
These so-called cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, a check was a cryptocurrency. It was a piece of paper upon which you wrote yourself, mm-hmm. and you wrote the amount and you wrote your signature. And it was therefore mirrored by the money that was in your bank account. Mm-hmm. A credit card, or certainly a debit card, is, if you like, cryptocurrency because it acts as if it is money, which it is. Your account is debited straight away. A credit card is something else. It's a promise.
Yes, it's a wish for some people.
It's a wish. Anyway, let's get back to the plot of your novel and tell me as much as you want to about Justy and his background and what he gets himself enmeshed in.
Well, Justy is Irish-American. Okay, he's born in New York, and his father was an aspirant stockbroker during the panic of 1793, and was found hanging in his hallway in that period. And everybody assumed, of course, that he'd hanged himself because he'd lost all of his money in the crash. But Justy, who was then raised by his uncle, and what happened when the father and the uncle came across from Ireland, they went their separate ways. Justy's father decided to take the high road and go to Wall Street. You might call that the low road, whereas the uncle decided to take the other road and became a criminal on the waterfront. So he raises Justy and, according to Justy's father's wishes, sends him to university in Ireland. And in fact, in 1798, the first Catholic college in Ireland had opened in Maynooth at St. Patrick's. So Justy goes there and gets caught up in the rebellion at the time. He also spends a little bit of time with the Paris police because he does a jurisprudence course and picks up a few special skills. And while he's with them, he realizes that his father, just judging by the wounds that he had, could not have actually hanged himself and must have been murdered. So he decides to come back to New York and find out who killed his father. Unfortunately, almost as soon as he arrives, he realizes that the people that were involved with his father are actually cooking up another financial scandal. And if he treads poorly, he could actually trigger a financial crisis that could bring the economy down.
What an intriguing plot. And I
a
mean,
lot
it
of stake.
Has so many contemporary resonances, you know, with bankers taking their own lives at the time of the crisis and all of that. And even if you go back to the Vatican Bank and the body under the bridge in London, extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
How has the book been received?
It's been received very well. I'm very pleased. I'm frankly very surprised. It's doing well in America. A lot of people seem to like it there, and it's doing very well here. I've had some great reception. So I'm delighted by the way that people are responding.
Is it seen as a true historical novel, or is it seen as some sort of allegory on today?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I've been, you know, because I'm a journalist, I try to be as meticulous as possible about sources and about setting. So a lot of people look at it as a kind of an illustration of what New York looked like at the time. But I think a lot of people do see it as an allegory. And there is some truth to that because, you know, I'm quite offended by the fact, as many people are in America, that during the financial crisis or as a result of the financial crisis, nobody went to jail as a result of any investigations. But yet there was clearly guilt. And I'm kind of exploring that concept of, you know, guilt and innocence and culpability when it comes to financial shenanigans, shall we say.
Well, the book is called The Devil's Half Mile. It's priced around €15 and it's in all good bookshops now. And in your publisher's blurb, you may not thank them for this, they say that you'd like to return to Ireland to get copious quantities of stout and proper bacon. Is that...
You can't get proper bacon in America, I'm sorry. But back bacon is the only place you can get it is here. So
a good back rasher.
Oh, well, nothing like it.
Paddy Hirsch, thank you very much for joining us. I bought an iPhone 6 about about 6 months ago, and a few people advised me not to update the software to the iOS 11 version as it would slow down the phone. I now find that my mail won't work, which I presume is because I haven't updated the software. Is there a further update of software available to sort this out?
I'd recommend that you do update the software. The reason these updates happen very often is for security purposes, and what happens is the people who make the apps that you use on your phone are optimizing those apps to work with the newest version of the software. So if you don't update your software, you're not getting the best from all of the services you use. I think you're absolutely right. I would never download iOS on the day it comes out. I think there's always little niggly bugs and all the rest. But 6 months on, they have ironed them out. So I would highly recommend, for security purposes alone,
and do you remember the scandal that was being talked about, that they were deliberately slowing down the phone so you'd have to buy a new one? They did something, though, to...
They reversed it. Yeah. So what was happening was, again, so every time there's a new piece of software push out onto these phones, it's more demanding on the phone. But again, it's to try and get the most out of the latest device. And what was happening was those who had older phones were noticing that it was slowing down, it was impacting the battery, but then there was uproar. So they reversed that slightly. So you should, you know, if this is an iPhone 6 that's only 6 months old, you should be all right to use iOS 11 on that.
Now, Chipolo, is it suitable for glasses cases?
Yeah, so the way it works, it is on a keyring, but you could totally throw it into your glasses case and it would be the dream. I said the other day that I would love a little patch that I could put on the side of my glasses and I could ring my glasses whenever I put them down, because obviously when I don't have my glasses on, I can't see them. But yes, absolutely, they would work in that scenario.
Someone living in Tip says, where can you purchase the Wi-Fi mesh system?
From DID and elsewhere online. It's €110, but I know the DID for sure stock it at the moment.
Just inquiring, is there a device to block internet in certain rooms?
Yes, and this is something that we didn't talk about when we were mentioning the mesh system. So the Tenda mesh system, that actually has sensational parental controls within the app that you use. So for example, if there is a Tenda device in the right side of the house, and that's where the kids' bedrooms are, you can knock that off and it won't impact the internet in the rest of the house. There is, of course, the iKids device that we've mentioned on this program many times before. And again, that allows you to manage individual devices, not necessarily just the parts of the house. So there's two options for you there.
Hi, Jess. I know in the past you've recommended a small plug-in multimedia device for the TV to watch Netflix, etc. Could you please remind me of your top pick? That's from Pamela.
I think you're talking about the Chromecast there. Would that be right? So this is the Chromecast device. It plugs into the HDMI port of your TV and it lets you stream anything from your phone or your devices onto the telly. It just plugs into the HDMI port and they're £40.
So if you wanted to watch Netflix and you're a subscriber, you just bring Netflix up on your phone or your laptop and off you go.
Exactly, you just stream it across. So it's very much aimed at those who don't have smart TVs. However, as I said on the show last week, I have a smart TV, but I don't really like the interface. So I still go on to Netflix through my phone with the Chromecast.
Where is it best to purchase a secondhand iPhone and which model would be best value now? That's from Porik.
So I would always recommend that you go to a proper premium reseller of these phones, because as you'll hear on this show every week, things can go wrong. So you don't want to buy it from a secondhand source that won't stand over if something does go wrong. So look on Apple's official website. They have a refurbished section. You can go into the likes of CompuBee here and have a chat with them and see if they have any models that are going to be discontinued. You know, September is just around the corner. That's when Apple usually unveil their next big phone. So if you are on the hunt, you could get an iPhone 6S, I'm sure, very, very cheap come September.
Interesting. I saw online recently that Apple are offering trade-ins. You know, they'll take back your old phone, you put in the key number,
your IMEI number,
whatever it is,
that one,
and they will actually give you a value. You get it back as a voucher.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is keep customers coming back to iPhone, because at the moment the offerings from Android with the likes of Huawei and Samsung and HTC, I mean, they're so competitive. Again, the OnePlus that we had in the studio a few weeks ago. So they're trying to get customers to come back into the Apple ecosystem.
What was the name of the home printer that Jess recommended last week? Does it scan documents and can you print from your smartphone? That's from Brida.
You can. Now, there are a whole host of printers available at the moment. The Canon, if memory serves, it was the Canon 5020 that we spoke about last week. And it is very good. It's a very basic printer, but it will do those different things that you're looking for. Also, in terms of scanning, because a few people have been asking me about scanning, there's an app on your smartphone available on both iOS and Android, and it's called Tiny Scanner. And what it does is it takes the camera on your phone. It's essentially taking a photograph, but it saves the file as a PDF. So that'll do the job for you as well.
And now, loads of people asking, where can I get the mesh system?
So DID.
I have a four-storey house. The Wi-Fi is on the ground floor. Can I get something to make it work on the top floor?
Yeah, so that's exactly, you're the perfect person for one of these Tenda mesh systems. So again, if
now you had one, when I saw it yesterday on your desk, it had three units.
Yes.
Can you get a bigger
system?
You can
add them on, yeah. So okay. Again, if you just search for the Tenda, I think it's the WM3-1200, I think is the name of it. So if you search for that, and then you can build up basically to your requirements. But absolutely take a look at this.
Just popped up on my screen. Are Chipolos waterproof? Thinking of getting one for my Houdini-like dog, but she loves the water. That's from Kira in Mayo.
I don't know off the top of my head.
And I don't think they are, because you can prize it open to replace the battery with a thumbnail.
Damage.
So I wouldn't say it would work.
My gut would say no, but I can say for sure.
My iMac and my iPhone will not talk to my HP desktop jet printer. I think it's something to do with speed. My broadband works at 5 gigs. The printer works at 2.4 gigahertz. Is there any fix? From Brian in Dundrum.
Usually you can pick what frequency the printer would go on. So you should be able to put it onto the same one as the broadband, or else change the broadband to go onto the other one for this instance. It's an absolute pain in the face. I know my dad got a new printer a while ago and we were there trying to pull our hair out getting it to pair up. So if you want, I will give you a shout after the show and hopefully find a solution for you, because it could be one of a million things, to be honest with you.
If I get one of your Chipolos for my dog collar and he goes missing, but if he's not in a Wi-Fi connection area, is it then useless to find him if he's out of range?
So the range on these, I think it's up to 200 metres or something like that. So the idea is that you'd have a notion of where, like say if it's your keys, for example, you'd have an idea of where it is and then you can ring it and you can do that. It doesn't necessarily need to be within a Wi-Fi connection, but you would need to be within a certain range. So this isn't probably the best solution for that in that instance. However, they do this thing, I can't remember the name, I think it's like the Chipolo community. And the idea is that if you have the app, and then you can basically give somebody a code, they put it in, they can call your device, so hopefully you can track it down. But it probably isn't the perfect solution for your missing dog.
My husband Tom asks, how can he boost Wi-Fi upstairs for the TV in the bedroom? Now, he has Wi-Fi on the phone, and that's from Mary Carlin in Wexford. I wonder, is he thinking of using his phone as a hotspot?
Yeah, like that could work. So you could do that, or you could look at the things that we mentioned earlier on. So not necessarily the mesh system, but looking at something like the TP-Link booster. And then what that will do is, if you already have Wi-Fi downstairs, it'll just drag it up upstairs. In terms of using your phone as a hotspot, just check out the T's and C's on your phone bill, because I've heard from a few people recently who've gotten absolutely stung with massive phone bills because of tethering.
Yeah, John Higgins has been on and obviously likes the sound of the Chipolo and the fact that you can just pair it to your phone by just touching it to the back of the
phone. It's very neat. It's very, very neat.
But he wants to know, where can you get it? Now, you mentioned Brown Thomas.
Yes, you can buy it online. So their website is soda.shop, or you can order it online from the Brown Thomas shop either.
A question about the Huawei P20 Pro. I'm thinking of buying one. I know it's expensive, but I would value your opinion. That's from Teresa. Now, just put the price of that in some sort of perspective.
Okay, so the way the P20 Pro costs €879, if memory serves correct.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money to buy it outright. However, it's still significantly cheaper than the iPhone 10 or the Samsung Galaxy S9 or any of those devices. I would highly recommend it. I think a few people in the office have bought the Huawei P20 Pro on the back of my recommendation. It's by far the best phone that I've used in a long time.
Are they available on any kind of programs with the major networks?
You can buy them. So if you are on bill pay, for example, you can do a deal. So, you know, if you sign up for the usual jobby of like 18 months or 24 months, you'll get it at a discounted price depending on what your phone bill is. They are in high demand. I know that a lot of people, I said a few people here in the office, had issues getting them on the Vodafone network. They were sold out for a while because the demand has been so huge. But as far as I'm aware, because Neil here in the office got one last week, so they are back in stock. So I would highly recommend it, even though it is expensive. It's just incredible.
And how does it compare to the OnePlus 6?
It is. So the OnePlus 6 internally, the spec isn't as impressive as the Huawei P20 Pro. The camera on the P20 Pro and the battery on the P20 Pro are far superior. The OnePlus 6 is...
it's lightning fast, as we discovered.
It's lightning fast, and it's also aimed at those who want a high-end smartphone without paying the high-end price, because it's around 599. So it's, again, a good bit cheaper. It's about a third of the price of the iPhone 10.
All right, Jess. Look, thank you very much for all of that. And Tech Talk will return to our... you get it on...
You can get it on podcast first, don't you know, on Friday at noon, or you can tune in Sunday at 6. And this week I'm out talking to the company that makes... They use robots to make wearables for cows. That's what I'm doing this week.
Robots to make wearables for cows. Jess Kelly, thank you very much.
Thank
indeed.
You.